this club's about winning trophies. I'm inexperienced in a lot of those things.
You win it, the new European champions, the treble, the dream come true for you.
Oh, I can't believe it. Football, bloody hell. But they never give in. That's a winner.
Welcome to the American Red Devils podcast. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And we are bringing you the best Manchester United news from this side of the pond.
Ooh, sir, how you doing? What a game from the history books, in the most recent history books, one that made Ole a legend. And I don't think things have gotten better since then. But the PSG second leg game, what a game it was. I'm glad we went back into the history books in such a meaningful way in the near term for our 200th pod. What a big one it is.
Yeah, sir. Happy 200. It's amazing that we've put together 200 podcasts. Who would have thought?
Can't believe it. Now it's in quarantine. I wouldn't have called that. If you're like, our 200th pod, we're not going to be able to see each other because of a pandemic and we're going to be doing it remote. Hey, we're rolling with it.
Yeah, hey, look, life gives you lemons. You make lemonade, sir. We'll have a few Guinnesses for 300. How about that?
I'm just having a Guinness
next
here.
Milestone.
I'm having a Guinness in your honor, sir.
Pause not going anywhere. Banter's not going anywhere. And Manchester United is not going anywhere, sir. I mean, what a match. If you didn't follow along, we did a rewatch of the PSG second leg match, sir. You and me went to the first leg, actually, at Old Trafford. What a game to go to.
Went to the wrong leg.
We went to the wrong leg. But I'll tell you what, Bishop's Blaze was hopping.
It was.
For eight hours before that home match. The lads, they weren't up for it. I remember, what was it? Lingard went down injured. He had a few key injuries in that game, and we kind of lost it all. And Angel Di Maria, the snake, made us pay, sir. So, I mean, it was all right in the end. But rewatching this game, I forgot a lot of things. You know, I only watched it once. That's the thing, all these great games. Usually you only watch it once. So a lot of things I, you know, kind of revisited, sir. It was interesting.
And it's amazing. It was only like a year ago, you know, just over a year ago. And it feels so long ago. I don't know. For me, maybe I'm just speaking personally, but it feels like 5 years ago. I'm sure everyone's one of those huge victories with such a dramatic ending that you just always remember where you were. I remember being in the airport on the way skiing and just seeing that goal standing like a maniac, cheering, making a scene. But it was great to rewatch it, like you said. Haven't seen it since, but a lot of standout performers. You know, there's a lot of that team is still around, which is exciting to see, and a lot of young, hungry youth. So it was a great game, great watch, and it was so great to see all the Paris fans and players melt down at the end. I mean, that makes it so worth it.
Especially
so sweet.
We saw them in Manchester,
and they're the worst fans ever.
Like, yeah, they're like furry coats. Everything is like Jumpman, Nike, like looking too fresh, like Paris to the day they die. You know, and they pull one on us in Manchester, and I had a special distaste for them. So seeing them in the stands crying at the end, that was the best outcome you can hope for.
It really was. It made it that much better. Like you said, they just stood out as fans that don't look like football fans. You know, they could, like, when we were leaving the stadium, you saw the Paris fans retreating. Velour jumpsuit, sir. That's all I got to say. But anyway.
It's the only game we've seen in person that we've lost. I mean, every game I've been to, Manchester United has won out of the, I think, six or seven. I've seen like actual games, not like preseason or friendlies or anything like that. Manchester United has won. That was the first time I've ever seen them lose.
Same here. I mean, I think that also makes it sweet because we did come back and win the tie. So, you know, obviously you would have liked to be in Paris, but you could say we're there. That Bishop's play is the highlight. It's a bad thing when the game
at the wheel.
Gets out.
Yeah, I mean, 8 hours of Ole's at the wheel and a lot of dark ales. It was great.
A lot of dark ales and light ales.
Sir, quick PSA for the podcast. If you like the pod, we do everything on our own. You can really help us out. Write a review, share it on social media. We love doing this. We're just two fans on the couch giving you our gut reaction. If you haven't noticed, this podcast is not too polished. We speak right from the heart, sir. We also have some kick-ass merchandise at AmericanRedDevils.com. If you click on store, we have some scarf shirts. We even have that hoodie. Manchester Schneider undefeated since we released that hoodie. So limited edition, sir.
Going strong, too.
Undefeated.
Undefeated in counting, sir.
And then we have the blog that we're working on creating content for, AmericanRedDevils.com. If you'd like to contribute, shoot us an email. We just want that to be a forum for fans to talk about everything Manchester United, get their opinion out there. This podcast is all about being for fans, by fans, sir.
Like you said, sir, that blog, we still got it going. We're still selling lots of great gear. Check out AmericanRedDevils.com. Write a review, and if you send a screenshot to us at AmericanRedDevils@gmail.com, we will send you a couple stickers because we appreciate it that much. And things will go on. We are in quarantine football. Yeah, it's been 4 weeks since live football, sir. 4 weeks.
The hoodie is the crown jewel, best piece of merchandise we've created. So you can't go wrong getting a hoodie, sir. I'm wearing mine right now.
Hoodie or the shirt, Glazer Out shirt, or even a scarf. We've got a couple left of this inaugural scarf, and then we're going to change it out for a new one. So the future's bright. You know, I know things are tough. There's a lot of instability in the world. A lot of, economic situation, health situation for a lot of people is scary at the moment. But football is still there, even if it's in a different form. If we're watching replays, we know that they'll be back, and that adds a lot of brightness, because I think we might see them back this year. It might be behind closed doors, but I think that would help a lot, because live sports, you don't realize how much a void that fills in people's lives.
Yeah, and even just rewatching a game like the PSG, it's only, like you said, it's only a year ago. Feels 5 years ago. I mean, look at that roster. Look at the players. They're talking about missing, like, oh, Herrera's out. Like, what are we going to do? Pogba's injured. What are we going to do? Like, looking at who's available is a totally different team compared to now. And I feel like it was almost like we lost so many players, but we got stronger. And a lot of that core, Fred, McTominay, what a year it makes for Fred, right? I mean, now you look at him in that PSG game, you're like, he's a liability. Now he's a leader on the team, right?
No, it's right. It's funny because that's like the makeshift midfield with Herrera out, Pogba unavailable with the cards. I think Matic was injured as well. And all of a sudden, Fred and McTominay look like they could hang with some of the best midfields in Europe. So it was a hell of a match. McTominay was a player of the match for me, as well as probably Mr. Ashley Young. Actually put in a terrific performance. Like, you know, lots of goal line stops and goal line clearances. So what a game that was. And a lot of that strong backbone that you talked about, the youth team, right? Mason Greenwood featuring at the end. Chong even putting in a couple of minutes. So it was a great match to watch. It was even nervy watching it again, even though you know exactly what happens. It was amazing stuff.
Yeah, very. Hate PSG.
Hate them.
Although I like the Jumpman jerseys. Wouldn't mind Jumpman Manchester United kits, I'll tell you that much.
That'd be fresh.
Sir, before we get full into the recap, I thought we would just talk about coronavirus and the latest surrounding English football. I know this is kind of boring, but it's good to understand the inner workings of what's going on in England. Obviously, you're reporting on it here in stateside. We don't have all the details in the media because, you know, everyone's talking about NFL draft, the NBA, et cetera. UFC, I think they're trying to fight on an island. You know, I was really pumped for that one. But the English game, it looks really bad right now on all fronts. As everyone knows, as of April 3rd, they suspended the season indefinitely, and they would, in their quote, the restart date is under consistent review with all stakeholders, as is the impact of COVID-19 and how that develops. We will work together through this very challenging time to find the resolution for the season. And then, so after the season was suspended, definitely, clearly the teams, if you look at the top flight, even in the English Premier League, obviously there's six divisions in professional football. There's tons of different leagues in England. The clubs financially are just completely in tatters, right? And the issue is they don't have the ticketing revenue, and they're going to have to pay back some of that TV revenue. So about a week and a half ago, they got together on a phone call, the Premier League and the PFA, who represents the Players Association, and they had to find a way for the players to take a wage haircut so that the clubs can essentially save upwards of £280 million. And this is all per the New York Times. Some new revenue, new information came in about that call. And essentially the players, they said, hey, we want to see the actual financial forecast for each club before they can decide to take the haircuts, right? Because they want more information about what's this money going to go towards.
Yeah.
Right. And I knew we talked about that update last pod. So it was kind of a stalemate on this 30% haircut / deferral. And then Tottenham came in, your boy Levy.
Levy and Liverpool just really showing how to not be a top club. Just like, I love Liverpool just backtracking, and Levy still hasn't. That's the best part. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so basically they come to this 30% agreement, which is basically for a year. They're going to defer or reduce their wages, and they're going to figure it out. Then all of a sudden, Levy comes in hot right by behind Ashley's Newcastle, and they place most of the non-playing staff on furlough, essentially tasking the British government with paying the wages of the furloughed workers, because they will pay up to 3 months of their wages, up to 80% of their salaries for the next 3 months. Now, the issue here is that he basically furloughed all the staff to put pressure on the players to take that cut, right? Because now he's saying, hey, all the workers don't have a job and they're on government. They're basically on welfare in the UK. and you're getting paid full tickets. So you basically, the pressure's on you to take that wage cut, right?
Well, they're on unemployment.
And this is kind of when everything fell right. apart.
Yeah, I mean, they're on unemployment, basically, and they're asking the feds in the UK to pick up the check. Exactly. Even though some of the big clubs are not doing that, right? United came out and said, we're going to continue to pay our match day staff throughout this crisis. And that's the move to do because they've got enough money. And this is just like, you know, they're just trying to defer those wages. They don't have to pay them. So that's the thing.
Well, Levy was using it as a bargaining chip for the players. Basically, you lay off all these people and then you say, hey, the players are greedy. They're getting paid all the money. So then it looks like they should be taking a cut, right? So then the players in reaction to this, they're like, why should I take a wage cut? And then the Players Association basically said, hey, if you cut our wages, you're going to cut the amount of money that's taxed and then goes to NHS. So you're hurting the NHS. Right. So they made it about like the players made it about like, well, if you don't pay us more money, then the NHS is going to technically get less money. Then the teams are saying, well, hey, you know, we're not making this money. So you're greedy. All you want is money. Then so the players kind of split off and they created their own charity. And it's called, I think it's called the hashtag Players Together Initiative. And they have partnered with NHS charities and they're going to donate a portion of their wages. Maybe that 30% that would have gone to the ownership or to the clubs to the NHS. So now the players are just saying, we're going to take the money we make, donate it to the NHS directly. And so it's basically this big PR battle where the fans hate the clubs for furloughing the workers. The fans think the players are greedy for not taking a wage cut. The players are paying the NHS directly and not playing their clubs who actually need the money. So it's a complete nightmare. All stakeholders, fans, players, owners, and non-playing staff are all upset about everyone. I think the league has handled the situation disastrously. Liverpool was another club that said they're going to furlough workers and then they just changed their mind. So right now, the inner workings of football and how we're going to get back to a smaller season or a shortened season, it's in dire straits, right? Because think of the business. You would have liked the call to go, hey, 30% cut, the players take it, everything kind of go lockstep, everyone agrees, and then maybe getting back to playing would be a little easier. But this disarray right now in British football, in the English Premier League, at the highest level, it's not looking good, especially when the amount of money that the clubs are going to lose is staggering, and they need that to survive. So I think things are probably getting pretty dark, sir.
It's a shit show. I mean, the whole thing around the contracts, what happens with the player contracts, what happens with the TV contracts, what happens whether or not they're going to avoid the season or just continue to push out the end date. There's so much uncertainty. They don't have things under control. They don't have the testing that you need in order to have a near-term timetable in terms of getting these games played again. So unless they're about packing up the whole teams and shipping them to a country that seems to have it under control, which is, you know, a handful, few and far between, I don't see football coming back in a while. I just don't see it.
But my point is, if you look at the stakeholders, so like the solution is going to be there. But the stakeholders right now are all in disagreement over how this is being handled, right? The players split off on Wednesday to create their charity, right? That's this Wednesday. So we're like, the idea of them taking a haircut, now they're giving 30% of their wages or however much to the NHS, it's not going to happen. So now the owners are going to be stuck with the tab. They need to find the £280 million to basically float themselves through this season. It's to get the parties back and say, hey, play these games. You know, it's going to be difficult when you have the Players Association and the league fighting. I mean, right now you don't have the NBA and the NBA's Players Association aren't fighting about coronavirus. Right.
Well, it's just it's
almost like a lockout in the season while the season's trying to come back together. And so the resolution of this is going to be very important when both parties agree and they're in the same boat. But right now it looks like how could they get to a season if they can't agree on what to do with the wage cuts, et cetera?
Well, it's the wage cuts. I'm telling you, the TV bill, the fact that they might have to pay back like £100 million, certain clubs in terms of like what is owed to them. Because I think they paid out at the beginning of the season, and now they have a quarter of the season still left, 9 games left to play. Everyone's scrambling for their cash, scrambling for what they're going to pay.
Sunderland could be gone. Like, I mean, to talk about lower league teams, they could just be gone. I mean, even you could look at teams in the English Premier League, you know, like West Ham. You know, teams could be gone if there's no bailout for these clubs. So there's going to be we haven't even got to the government involvement as far as what they're going to look at bailing out financially. But the fact that players who basically take most of that, most of the 65% of the expenses go to player wages and the players are not budging on a cut, it's not looking good. We'll keep you guys updated. I know this is kind of boring, but you get into the weeds here, and it's good to understand exactly how we could get back. Now, sir, talking logistically, how we could return to football.
What are we playing? What are we playing? I got no idea.
Assuming everything goes well with the PFA and the league, essentially, from a source who's close to the chairman of the Premier League, they could return solely as a TV event. I think that comes to no surprise. There'd be no fans there.
Weird.
They say June
so
or
weird.
July, and they say that could be suggested that Wembley could be used to stage up to 4 games a day to make it happen.
A day, so wow.
What you could get is maybe like a World Cup scenario where you're looking at 4 games every day, all at Wembley. There's also a bunch of other stadiums in London they could use. Essentially, they're looking at any way to basically get these games. So the league is just money, money, money. Clearly, that's their position. The players might be safety, safety, safety. Don't get coronavirus. They're going to have to come up with the tests, how they're going to do it, et cetera, travel, contact, everything. Who knows when that's going to be essentially safe. But, you know, they're going to do everything they can to get the season done. And the quote from the source was, if they have to play 4 games a day, every day at Wembley to get it done, they will do that. And sorry, that would imagine like, it'd be like a Premier League World Cup where you're watching every day, 4 games.
It's pretty
like
awesome.
9, noon, 3, 6. It would just be like every day. It would be amazing. Like in sequential order. I would absolutely love it.
We'd be working overtime, sir. I mean, I'd have a newborn baby. You've got like a 6-month-old baby, and we would be doing nonstop pods because there'd be so much football. I think I'd be okay with it. But I have a feeling, sir, what's the question is, are they going to risk the players and the staff safety in order to get football going sooner than it should be just because of all the financial repercussions around it?
Well, I think it's going to come down to testing, like you mentioned earlier. As soon as there's like an instant test, like where you can do a test and get a result in 5 minutes, like they're going to be able to test people to the level that, you know, they all know everyone doesn't have it who's in the stadium, right? And once you're at that point where you can basically like not let someone in somewhere unless they get a coronavirus test, and you can say, hey, take the test, wait 5 minutes, okay, you're good, come in. Like that technology will basically, the NBA will be back. Every sport in America will be back because they'll be able to certify everyone doesn't have it who's in the building, and then that you can play with no fans, right? You can't test every fan in the stadium. The idea is you can get the players, the staff cleared in a timely manner where you could actually conduct a match in a safe way. And if that is available, which, you know, I know every biotech company or every med tech company in the world's working on this. If they get that done, I mean, it would save sport. And no fans, though. They can pump in the crowd noise, sir. But
I better say, well, how long are we from that? That feels like it's a long way away.
There's those instant tests do exist, though, right? Yeah. We've talked about it.
Korea's got it. I mean, they can get in like 15 minutes, I believe. So it's just they need to scale, right? You need a lot of them. They need to be cheap. And you need to be able to test people like every couple of days just based on the fact that they're going to be moving around. Unless they do like a, you know, straight up like Olympic format where people are like, you know, the players are in these like villages, self-contained, and they're all kind of locked off. It's going to be very interesting.
There's $1 billion at stake, sir. They'll figure something out. I mean, that's the thing about, look, as a fan, I want sports. I mean, hey, I wanted that USC cage fight on a cruise
ship. I know you did. You were looking forward to that.
It doesn't like, I just want something, especially if you're quarantined. Imagine if you're quarantined and you have Manchester United. I mean, it'd be unbelievable, sir. We'd all be watching it. Get pods back to normal. I would absolutely love it. Any sporting activity we need. It's like bring the country together. Bring the world together.
We might get a summer tournament. You know, it might not be the Euros, but we might end up with a summer tournament all the same. So we will see how things develop. It is a rapidly changing situation, literally day by day. You know, things are developing, moving, and shifting. So we'll keep you posted. But like we said, even a week ago, this has changed. So it's kind of incredible to watch how fast things are moving.
Absolutely. Should we jump into the match, sir? PSG versus Manchester United, the second leg, sir. I mean, round of 16, unbelievable here. We were talking about what matches to play. And again, this was on the 6th of March, 2019. The Parc des Princes in Paris. You didn't want to watch this game. So watching the game, I was like, this is an unbelievable match. Why didn't you want to do a rewatch of this game? Is because you because of your love for Big Luke who left?
No, maybe I just like didn't realize, you know, in the moment it was such an unbelievable game. You know, I remember watching the penalty and just and the early goals. But I was kind of like traveling throughout that game, didn't really get to enjoy it in all its splendor. Sir, prove me wrong. I enjoyed it immensely the second time watching it. So this is the first time I've watched it since the actual live showing. It was a great match. You know, I guess my only irritation was that some of these players have now gone, but there were standouts, the players that are going to be long-standing players at this team for a long time, including Rashford, McTominay, even Luke Shaw, I think, had a great game.
There are players in the Chelsea final that aren't here, but winning that Chelsea final is just as sweet. I mean, like, that's the game we play. I mean, players come in, players leave. Like, you know, you go back and watch a Yannazai game. Sir Yannazai didn't turn out, you know, just like one of those. It's like, it's kind of sad once you know the result. You know, while you like Greenwood, we all hope he becomes a world, and you never know what will happen with the young prospects or anyone coming up, because in 5 years it might not age that well. But you have to take the win, unbelievable win. I would say this is the match for me since Sir Alex Ferguson left. I know we've won some silverware, the Europa League with Mourinho. That seemed like a formality playing the Ajax team. You know, the FA Cup. With LVG was pretty solid. EFL Cup was Zlatan scoring. There are some moments, you know, like, but this one for me is like coming back against PSG, you know, Mbappe, Deemer. I can go down the list. I mean, this team is like
troll after like troll. Even Neymar was trolling from the bench. That shot at the end is just meme. It's just meme city.
Oh, that will never go away. people will be like, Jack will be like, who's the, he'll know Neymar from the meme, won't know him for his football, sir. That's how big of a meme that is. but, you know, it was one of those where, like, this match to go on to the quarterfinals to play Barcelona, it felt like Manchester United, Barcelona, Champions League, the music, everything. Like, we're back, baby. Like, we're back. De Gea and net. It just made me like remember what Manchester United, was and always has been. And it's a team that's a juggernaut. It's going to be in the semifinals. It's going to be in the finals. It's going to be challenging for that top level of silverware. And look, this team and this win made me believe. So I would say, it's been a long 7 years. I definitely shed a tear when Rashford kicked that penalty in, because it's been a hard run, sir.
It's been a hard run. But praise thee, sir. Well said. On Easter Sunday, you made a believer out of me, man. I honestly didn't realize how much of an important win it was. Maybe only second to like that City comeback. Chills. That 3-2 comeback was also kind of, in my mind, one of my favorite wins since Fergie left. But I understand what you're saying. This is such a quick.
That was like a cheer win. This is like, oh my God.
This is a cheer win too, because we got knocked out the next round. But it's a quintessential United performance, and the fact that we just hung on, never say die. Sir. You know, just like Bamba don't break stuff and absolutely come back at the end. A little VAR luck. They have been on our sides for the last year, especially under Ole. But Rashford with that goal.
I want to debate it, sir. You said we didn't win nothing. I was like, we got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. When was the last time we got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League?
Fergie.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's not winning anything.
You win PSG, you get to the – what would you rather win, EFL Cup or play Barcelona in the quarterfinals of the Champions League? EFL Cup. Assuming you don't know the result. So at the time you beat PSG, you don't even know who the draw is. You know you're going to the quarterfinals of Champions League. That is the most significant. I would rather have that than with the EFL, win the EFL Cup. 100%. Dude, quarterfinals of Champions League, we're playing on Thursday nights.
Yeah, but no, I know we are, but no one remembers if you don't win. No one remembers. No one cares that you made it to the quarterfinals. I remember this game. It was an unbelievable game.
Because it's been 7 years, and that is the greatest achievement that our club has made in 7 years, because we have not. If we were in a title race and we lost, I could say that might be. What's the better achievement, finishing second or getting the quarterfinals of the Champions League?
Finishing second.
Finishing second by a mile. Finishing second by in 30 points or getting the quarterfinals. I think getting the quarterfinals of the Champions League, that's the best we've come. And we only let in one goal at home against Barcelona. We went in the second leg. We had all to play for. I mean,
De Gea had that huge gaffe.
This is the best we've looked. This is the best I felt as a Manchester United fan by far. So we're talking about trying to make top four, and you're putting your thumb up at the.
This is like debating who's got a prettier wife. You know, it's like it's a fruitless matter. I see your point. you know, I have a different opinion, but hold on a second. I'm just saying, is it like, I agree with you. This is the highest, one of the highest feelings we had since Ole. I felt as good in the most recent run that we went on. You know, that's like the last time we felt this good under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because after this, it all came crashing down, if you don't remember.
Yes, of course.
Fortunately, I remember too well. But all I'm saying is, like, those were great feelings, unmatched in many ways since at least Ole has been manager. But especially since then, I think with the, you know, the transfers he got in January and that run he went on before his football got suspended, you know, that brought the good feelings back in a major way that I haven't felt since Fergie, even more so than this game. I remember this game, but then it all came crashing down so quick.
Top four, but we were battling for top four,
and we are again.
So we didn't get it. No, so it's like, I'm saying
we didn't win the Champions League either, though, bro.
What is the best?
We got knocked out by Barcelona.
Sir Alex Ferguson left this game. Winning this game, I think, is the highest high I have had as a fan since, without question, since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. And it reminded me of the, it's like Santa Claus is real again, almost. And then we went and De Gea had those errors at Barcelona, which was
not fun.
Not
great.
No, not great. Not great. But, you know, if you were telling me that we're going to get knocked out in the quarterfinals next year, I'd be pretty happy.
No, no doubt. It's a great game, sir. I'm not calling this like a non-significant game. I'm just, it's one or two. It's up there. Yeah, definitely, sir. It's a huge match. And that's why I was so happy to rewatch it again.
Look, this pod, where this is authentic debate between two Manchester United fans, you know, so like you, the format of the debate might not be fair, but for some reason, you know, like this game for me really struck an emotional nerve. And you're kind of like, he didn't, nothing.
I didn't say that at all, actually, because you're putting words in my mouth like distinctly, because at the beginning I said rewatching it made me realize how amazing of a game it was again. And I said this was one or two, you know, so please, sir, please don't belittle the fans by twisting my words like that.
Sir, you know how I like to argue. Line up. We had
Saves
World number one in net. Luke Shaw, Lindelof, Smalling, Bailly. Back four by who he let us down this game. Pereira, Fred, McTominay, Young, Lukaku, and Rashford up top. One thing we didn't touch on, Maguire was missed here, sir. Maguire was missed. What'd you make of this lineup, putting Bailly at right back? Never been done before. Probably will never be done again. What are your thoughts?
I think Ole was just trying to make what he had at his disposal work, right? 10 players missing. Herrera was out. Matic was out. Pogba was out with his red card from the first leg of the match. He was giving it a go. I think you saw really early, obviously, based on how the first 15 minutes went, that this was not the move. Him at right back was not going to work out. So making that switch with Ashley Young, bringing him off, actually proved to be a huge difference maker in the second half of this team. What'd you make of it?
Like you said, just like, My number one takeaway is kind of comparing it to now is that Fred McTominay, I remember being disappointed about those two in the midfield. Now they're bang on midfield duo. And obviously, you know, seeing Smalling at the back, I thought was great. But if you look at Smalling, Bailly, and Lindelof, you lack that steel, and Maguire has that steel. I'd love to see Maguire and Smalling play together. I think if you had four center backs, Bailly, Smalling, Lindelof, Maguire, I don't think you need any more than that. Phil Jones, take a hike. Also, Andres Pereira, this is a big game for him coming in. Lukaku and Rashford up top in a two. Love to see that. But again, I thought the buy it right back, that was probably my number one, kind of what the hell. And obviously, Ole would make that early sub. So he did react. He did make the right changes. It was a hell of a game, sir. What a night in Paris. You want to kick us off?
Started pretty early with a bang, sir, in the second minute.
It'd be enough. There's an early mistake here and an early chance for Lukaku, an early goal for Lukaku, and Manchester United get the perfect start. Gifted to them. Lukaku has been in splendid form in the Premier League.
Sir, gifted to them, but Luke still had quite a bit to do. Good goal, you know, take advantage of their mistake early, and that was key. You knew as soon as they got this goal, it was on like Donkey Kong, bro. That's all United needs.
I know. It was like Rashford pressed. Lukaku got the ball. I mean, he had a lot to do and somehow rounded the keeper. I mean, Lukaku couldn't put a foot wrong at this time last season. For whatever reason, you know, injuries, he had to come in. Ole didn't have many opportunities, but Lukaku really earning his stripes here. I mean, class from him. Sad that he ended up leaving, but, you know, that's how the cookie crumbles. I think he likes it in turn. I think we're better off probably without him. But, I mean, what a performance he put in. What a shift.
He did. He had two great goals, two like quintessential Lukaku goals. But you did see at times like that touch, unfortunately. And I'm a fucking Rom fan, dude. You know, I was a big Rom fan. Oh, had his kits. His touch, like touch the second like half. Him. No, it's not. But it doesn't matter. Like, but you compare that even to Ighalo. It's like that touch. That was his weakness. That was what he wasn't good at. He had that kind of club foot at times, and he did show it at times in the second half for sure. But what a first half he had. And then after this goal, PSG came out hot. They looked very attacking-oriented, and United looked vulnerable, with most of the attack focused on the right side of the field. Di Maria and Burnett were cutting up by Ian Young. Burnett had Mbappe at wide in front of goal and just missed pretty right after the first goal. And then Alves put in a good ball to Mbappe again, but Smalling was there with a last-ditch challenge.
Yeah, so essentially, like I think it's Bernard, sir. He was on the left back. And they're just terrorizing Bailly. Bailly kind of wanted to default to a center back position. Then he would come out. They'd grab him there. He was just completely in no man's land. And obviously, you know, in the next goal, he kept them onside and then got beat as well. So unfair to Bailly, a great player, but kind of in no man's land. Didn't really know how to kind of play that balance between center back or right back.
Like you said, in the 12th minute.
Mbappe, and there's the goal for Bernat.
Oof, I mean, just absolutely wide open. Bailly caught snoozing, you know, obviously leaving his player onside, but, you know, playing a position he's not comfortable playing in, but either way, he shouldn't be ball watching like that. Tough goal to give
up. No, it was bad. That was tough. I mean, you get the huge goal, you come in, you know, PSG has two away goals on us. You know, we basically need two to push it to pens. If they score one, you need two more, sir. I mean, this is completely deflating. We had hope for about 10 minutes. And, you know, like you said, Mbappe involved. I mean, is he like probably, I would have to say he's top three in the world easily. I mean, Mbappe, would love to see him at United, but, you know, we don't get players like that anymore.
Yeah, I think we got a couple of players in the ranks that could challenge Mbappe, and one was Marcus Rashford with that late goal. So we build him in Manchester from the ground up, sir. We don't buy him from Monaco. But more of PSG all the time at this point. They were hot, coming out real hot at United. We looked a little disorganized with that back three or four. I don't even know what it was at this point. 20th minute, Dave saves. Bernat, again, opens up on the right-hand side, had a free shot and should have done better, to be honest. A little bit lucky. And then in the 30th minute, speaking of Marcus Rashford.
See themselves when they get into an attacking position, Manchester United. And why not? Mistake by Buffon. Second goal from Lukaku. Rashford shot. And Lukaku pounced. Well, would you believe it? Rashford is...
Would you believe it, sir? Rashford having a little bit of a quiet game up to this point, but has that knuckleball that some of those goalkeepers find hard to keep down.
It was also raining. It was wet. Buffon makes a mistake, doesn't make too many. Big Luke pounces. I mean, credit to him. He's a poacher. He was right there. Second goal, we're back in it. One away from winning, sir. I mean, you go, it's kind of one of those crazy things where you go, you think that Bernard goal completely kills it, then you score another. And if we score one, we win with the three away goals, sir. Absolutely love it. Manchester United fans rip roaring. But look, Ole was up to the task. He knew something was wrong on that right hand side. Dubai got. He got the hook for Diego Dalot. I mean, in the 36. I mean, what do you think about that change? Clearly, he saw it, made the change, and this completely changed the game. You put Ashley Young at right back. He was up to the task. Puts Dalot up kind of as a winger / midfielder in the 4-4-2. Whatever, we were switching around quite a bit, but Dalot kind of a winger on the right-hand side. What'd you make of that change?
I mean, I like it a lot. I like the confidence it shows in Ole, not even waiting until halftime, just being like, we could be down a couple more goals if we let this keep going. So making that sub, knowing that that's the weakness, and as soon as it did, it shored up the team. We got a little nervy at the end of the first half, but I think once it came out in the second half, knew exactly what they were doing. The team looked really assured, and actually, I think we closed them down the second half. It was the first half that we were like wide open. We know it looked so exposed. In the 40th minute, there was a good chance to low streaking down on the right-hand side, beats a man, and played a zinger into the box. The ball deflects off a PSG player and almost found the net, so that was a good chance. And that ended the half, sir. What would you be saying to the players at halftime if you were Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
I mean, to be honest, I remember going at halftime, I was like, as a fan, I was like so fired up. I was like, we're definitely going to score. I mean, you're one away. You got to have the momentum behind you. PSG, they got to be shook. They lost to Barcelona with a 4-goal lead. They've blown it before. They're bottlers, sir. It's in their blood. They got nothing. Plastic club, you know. But, you know, it's the second half. They come out, and we didn't have much going. I was disappointed. I mean, obviously, I'm getting the second half here. I remember being like, for sure, we're going to have a bunch of chances. We're going to be on the ball. But PSG, credit to them, they came out. They kind of bossed the game. It was really scraps. Our attack, you know, it didn't have too much teeth. And so, I mean, if I was Ole, I'd be pumping the boys up. I thought I would have seen a lot more out of them in the second half, given that we have everything to play for. It's ours to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think their midfield started bossing the game in the second half. They really locked down defense for sure and looked a lot more controlled on the ball. We didn't have a lot of chances. I don't think they had as many clear-cut chances as they did.
I mean, sir, 56 minutes.
Well, that one was a hell of a chance. 56 minutes, Mbappe flicked a pass through with Smalling's legs to Di Maria, who finished but was offsides, correctly offsides. But other than that one, you know, we're going to go through this list. There, obviously, De Gea saved us a couple times. Yeah, but, you know.
Hey, De Gea up to the task.
He was. 76th minute, another great chance for PSG. Meunier passes to Mbappe, but Mike Smalling puts in a last-ditch tackle. He had a nice little game from him. In the 80th minute, bringing on the throw, Chong came in for Pereira. I think Pereira put in one of his best performances, tried not to do too much, played small, you know, didn't take like outlandish shots, so it was a good performance for him. I still think he's a decent squad player. Young, you know, 22, 23 years old, no reason to ship him. Because he could still, you know, you get injuries, and he's a good player to have around.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. I think he got put into a starter's role a little
wasn't
too
ready.
Early, obviously, with a thin midfield. But he needs time. He needs time. I'm unsure what is his best position, though. I mean, he seems like he gets bullied in a midfield, too. He's not deft enough to play number 10, and he's not fast enough to play on the wing. So, you know, I just don't. He's got to be playing in midfield, too. I think you keep him for another season, maybe loan him out. But you're right, he's unfinished product. And then there's an intangible there as to sort of why he's not progressing.
Yeah, no doubt, sir. In the 82nd minute, Alves put in Mbappe in one-on-one. This was kind of a ridiculous chance, speaking of which. We were pushing forward at this point.
I forgot about this. They kind of caught us on the break.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, how did Mbappe not score?
De Gea came out, gets a hand on it, and Smalling puts in a last-ditch challenge, save the day. I think one of the players that scrapped up actually hit the post afterwards. So, nervy stuff at the end for Manchester United. 87th minute, we had Greenwood coming on, looking, dude, kid. The kid coming on for Young. Probably the oldest guy on the pitch other than Buffon.
Debut.
I know. Debut. Unbelievable. Dreamwood stuff. Ooh, sir. And then the 90th minute, DeLow playing a role, you know, and the VAR gods.
Arm is down by his side. United fans chanting VAR. At this stage, of course. And he's given the penalty.
Oh, my word.
Can you believe it?
A VAR awarded penalty right at the end. Up steps Rashford and fires it in.
Smashes it.
And fires Manchester United surely into the last eight of the Champions League.
Sir, PSG fans. Inject that in my veins.
The PSG fans are the best part, sir. You know it's a great game when you watch.
Inject that in my veins. Oh my God. What a goal. Marcus Rashford. Ice cold sun against Buffon. First penalty for Manchester United going on, sir, to the quarterfinals. Unbelievable.
And this is why you know Marcus Rashford is going to be a legend. Just like calls for it, give me the ball. Like you said, ice in his veins, doesn't show any emotion. There's a great moment in this when the, you know, I think the ref is like telling Buffon to stay on his line and the PSG players go to fuck with Rashford and Fred gets all up in their grill and gets in their face.
I mean, he knows
exactly what they're trying to do, which is like a Brazil move. Like, go, you know, go like mark the spot
or
just
class.
Go talk shit.
It's a low-class move.
It's a PSG. PSG is a low-class club, bro. They're like plastic club fans. All you got to do is meet a couple PSG fans.
Oh my God.
The worst fans ever
met. Anyone who doesn't know, look, if PSG, you look at them, you hate them already. right? Even the players don't like playing for PSG, right?
Like that paycheck,
the
baby.
The fans are like the worst. It'd be the equivalent would be like kind of like, I know there's probably some Pats fans, you know, it's like the fans who basically like all got on the bandwagon, you know, and they just have like tons of money, you know, whatever. They're just terrible, sir. Absolutely terrible. You know,
it's like if Arsenal was lights out, you know, if Arsenal had tons of money, cause it's like, they're all super posh, you know, like they're like $400 sweatsuits, like
Supreme backpack.
Yeah. A lot of that,
you know, like fur hoodie. And like they were, let's put it this way. You and me were like in like, basically like long sleeve shirts, like freezing out. Just like letting the dark ales do the
keep us warm. They keep you warm.
Coats. They were so cold. You know, they were like totally. They're soft, sir. They don't make them like that in Manchester, I'll tell you.
They certainly
or New
don't.
Jersey, for that matter.
They certainly don't, sir. But what a game it was! It seemed like stoppage time would just keep going forever. You know.
Well, one point on the penalty, I totally forgot. It's like, Delo took the shot. No one thought anything of it. No players appealed.
I know.
No one said anything. They went to the corner. The ref wasn't bothered by it. It was like, I was like, is this when it happened? Or I'm waiting for another chance. And then there's like a minute later and they're at the corner. And then all of a sudden some random VAR check. So it was really bizarre. Like to have it not appealed by any player, like they everyone went to go take the corner, like regular business. The referee didn't move. And then all of a sudden it's called down from the VAR gods. I mean, it was very bizarre how that penalty came to be. And then you saw it in slow motion clearly. Kimpembe, like that arm, it's like clear pen locked on. But you know, that was very bizarre. I forgot that. And then how much stoppage time after that there was.
Ridiculous.
I remember being like, I couldn't handle it. And then PSG, like right on it, like, dude, another great save by De Gea. Really nervy stuff at the end. I forgot about all that as well. But I mean, what a match, what a night. The players in the rain celebrating with the fans in the away section, doing it right, sir. I mean, absolute scenes at the Parc des Princes in Paris. I mean, like I said, greatest moment since Sir Alex. I mean, you know, a moment like that, a win like that, away in their house, because they were so smug. PSG, the players were so smug.
They thought they already won it.
With the bottle at Old Trafford, they were laughing all the way to the bank. Like, and I guess that's why, as a fan, it was very emotional for me, because I kind of feel like everyone just kicked dirt on Manchester United for the last 7 years, rightfully so. Managers changing, players changing, just doing absolutely nothing. And this game was finally a game where you could win it. It was a big deal. We had that swagger back. We could talk some smack. You know, no one could deny this result away in Paris against that PSG side, and it just made me proud. One of the long list of reasons to be proud to be a Manchester United fan, but this one was so sweet because it's been a tough run, sir. I mean, when's the next time? What's the over under on when the next time we're going to be in the quarterfinals of the Champions League?
Next year, bro. Next spring, you know it. I don't know.
Thanks for the biased fan view.
Yeah, honestly, based on the trajectory of our season,
to be like for next year would be like 10 times your money, I'm sure.
Yeah, of
like,
course, but that's reasonable.
I would think for us to be in the quarterfinals,
you got to make the Champions League first of all, there's got to be a season.
How many times have we been in the Champions League since Sir Alex Ferguson, sir?
Not many. Couple. Two, I think.
Three.
Two or three.
Moyes.
Yep.
LVG. Mourinho / Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I believe that is correct. And how many times we make it to quarterfinals, sir?
Once. So you made me a believer. And the big reason you made me a believer.
Is it going to take another seven? Is it going to take another seven?
No, of course not, because we're making progress finally under this manager, under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, which is why this is now my new favorite match, because he's our manager. And that's why it pips the City game, because that was Mourinho the troll who's gone. And now it's all about Ole. And he showed a lot of Ole tactics that we've seen. This was very much like a Ole win at this team.
Okay, I think I might have misspoke here. No. So it's actually one since Sir Alex Ferguson left. It's four times. That's correct.
Wow.
So 12-13 was his last season. We did Moyes. We got eliminated by Bayern Munich.
Remember that?
You recall?
Right. Ever had the screamer, and then they scored right away.
Had the screamer away. That was 1-1. Then 1-3. We basically lost away. Then under LVG. What cup was it? Champions League Bruges? We got through Champions League. Did we didn't lose to Bruges under LVG, did we?
don't know, sir. Tell me.
It was 3-1 at home and then 4-0 away. Huh. Well, Wikipedia is not making sense to me there in 2015, 2016. And then it was Sevilla, obviously, bouncing us around 16.
Remember that, like it was yesterday.
Really straight. The 2015, 2016 season.
We must have gotten bounced by Bruges.
I don't think we got bounced by Bruges, did we?
Do we make it out of the group? Do we make it out of the group?
Round of 16. Wow. Yeah, I don't think we got out of the group.
There you go. Sounds like LVG, sir. So this huge win.
How do we forget that, by the way?
Yeah, well, it's because it was forgettable because we didn't make it out of the group.
Unbelievable.
You want to talk about
that? No. Group B, Wolfsburg, PSV went through, and it was us and CSKA Moscow. PSV went through on 10 points in Group B. I totally forgot about that. Isn't that incredible?
I try to shut it out of my mind. Those are
and
dark
then we
days.
Went to Europa League, and I think that's when we lost to Bruges. I think that was the issue. Yep. Can you believe that? Wolfsburg and PSV and CSKA Moscow? What an easy group in the Champions League. We didn't get through. Unbelievable.
It was shit football under LVG, sir.
Hey, you forget shit football, huh? That's how it goes. Sorry for that that detour. Sorry, I had to figure that out. But, I mean, four times, once to the quarterfinals. That is the odds on that are very low. And you say we're going to do it next year.
I think it's
probably be like 5 years.
No way.
Within 5 years, I could confidently say we could do it.
Well, five years, but, definitely. I'm just being bullish.
I think 10 to win.
I think we win it within 5 years. If they keep spending money.
Okay. What do you want to bet on that? I'll bet you.
Well, it depends on when's the next 5 years, next five seasons after this one, right? The next five seasons. Sir, we're not going to make another bet. We got a whole match to do reaction on. We got to do news.
Okay. Sorry. No, I mean, look.
We'll do a bet. We'll think of a bet for next week, sir. We'll do a bet next week.
Sir, quarantine, we're going crazy in quarantine. It's not the same doing the podcast.
I haven't seen you in a month, bro.
Without you on my side. You know.
I know, sir. The bunker misses you, sir. Should I break down this match?
Absolutely. Give us the match reaction.
Possession, Manchester United, 28% versus PSG, 72%. Shots on target, United had 5 to PSG's 12. PSG conceded with 3 of the 4 shots on target they faced in the game and have been eliminated at the last 16 stage in each of the last 3 Champions League seasons. That's just, you know, reason alone that why this is such a great game. It's because PSG, we just cement the bottler status. I think they finally made it past the round of 16 this right before Corona, right? And that's like that famous picture of them celebrating with their fans and them all probably getting coronavirus, which we don't want them to do, of course. We know we don't want them getting sick. Anyway, next one. Romelu Lukaku's first goal after 111 seconds was United's fastest in a Champions League knockout since Wayne Rooney scored after 63 seconds against Bayern Munich in March 2010. Remember that game. It was a hell of a match. And since the start of last season, only Premier League players to score more goals in all competitions than Romelu Lukaku are Mo Salah, Harry Kane, and Sergio Aguero. Not a bad list, sir, for a player that often slated by United fans. Marcus Rashford's winning penalty was the first he's ever taken in a competitive match for Manchester United. What kind of steal he showed in that goal. And since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's first match in charge on December 22nd, I can't even say it because I know what happens after. Only Manchester City with 15 have won more matches in all competitions than Man United 14 among teams in the top 5 European leagues. Oh, there's a lot of stats. And United have now scored in 21 consecutive away matches in all competitions, equaling the club record set between November 1956 and September 1957 under the legendary Sir Matt Busby. And Greenwood became the youngest player to appear for Man United in the Champions League, aged 17 years and 156 days, breaking the record held by Gerard Pique. What a list of stats to go on and on, sir. Should we hear from the manager? He was glowing after this performance, rightly so.
Absolutely.
Questions on the game, if you'd like to start.
We always believed. That's the thing. We set out the plan. It wasn't about having the ball and outplaying them, because if you give this team too much space and time with Mbappe, you saw a few times in the first half when we missed our defensive shape, they threw us straight away. So the plan was to get the first goal, be in the game with 5 minutes to go or 10 minutes to go, and we were. No. No, I keep doing this job as best as I can every single day, and then let's see where it takes us.
Done in a few months, how disappointed will you be if you don't get the job now?
Well, it's been a fantastic time with the players, with the staff I've got working with me. So I've just got to say, I'm going to enjoy this job as long as I've got it. If it's another 2 months or 3 months, whatever long it is, I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to smile.
And, sir, that's why he got the job. Because that is like
he got the job shortly after this match, sir.
He certainly did.
Of March 2019, won 14 of 19 matches in charge.
Unbelievable performance, unbelievable match. Sentiments changed a lot in the last year.
14 of 19 in charge. Sir, can you believe that? 14 of 19 in charge.
I remember
it. Can you believe that?
Always at the wheel, sir. You remember Bishop's plays. It was not ripping for no reason at all. It was ripping because the team was flying high and playing some of the best football it's played since Fergie.
He's won 40 of 76 total.
Which is, you know, that's better than it was because he went on a nice run right before everything paused. But I have to say it, sir. This is the question for you, but I'm going to start with this. I never felt more positive about Ole, and part of that's based on the windows that have happened since this match and how right he's gotten it with the players he's brought in and the players he's gotten out. I know there was a big dip, obviously, after this, but I'm as optimistic as ever about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Look, football is a results-based game. If you're going to be the coach of the most popular team in the world, criticism is going to come. I'm going to say that we started the season. Everyone thought it would look one way. I think it completely turned the other. Like, a lot of big names out, shortage in the midfield. We didn't sign another striker. So a lot of finger-pointing. Obviously, I would talk Woodward, Zach Woodward, hashtag Glazers out. The club definitely had a tough patch. But, you know, we kind of turned it around. Bruno comes in, energizes the squad. Ole gets a little braver tactically. I think he's really been, how long has he been at the wheel? Like, you know, at least through the middle of the season, was really like a year. Now he's had a little more than a year. I think he's growing into the role. I think the football, I think the locker room is basically cohesive. I think the way he manages is he's a player's manager. He tries to defend the players in the press. He puts a lot of trust in them to get the job done on the pitch. He's not like a Mourinho. He's not going to play mind games. I think it's pretty straightforward how Ole's looking to run this club. I think at the beginning of the season, he thought Maguire could come in and be that player. Maguire, you know, he played game in, game out, wasn't that player. Now he has his man in Bruno, right? Bruno on the pitch.
And Maguire's been a great player.
His level, right?
Maguire's,
he needs that type of player.
No, he does. Maguire's been a terrific player for him, but he needs that player that's like out on the outfield, has the creativity, and demanding the ball, asks for it all the time, is a shooter. He just has that swagger. And Maguire's got it too, but in a different way. He's got more of a quiet swagger, has been a huge influential player. There's a reason he's the captain now, but
Bruno raises all boats. He raises all the tide, raises all
boats.
That Bruno's our tide. He came in, he's a winner. No excuses, yelling at Dan James on the right. Like chewing people out in the field, exactly what we need. And I think Ole, I think we're starting to find the right mix. The soup is starting to taste pretty good, sir.
It's getting sweeter, bro.
And only a maniac would change it. I mean, but you got to get Ole. It's hard to learn in the job at Manchester United, but Ole has been learning in the job. I remember when he was rigid with his tactics and we were just getting kicked in the teeth and he changes it up and we do a lot better. So I think he was not trying to take a lot of risk. I think the players, we needed some players. I think we got some players. I think Ole's learned a lot. He's progressed a lot. I think we're in a great place. I totally agree with you. I feel better now than I ever have, probably, as a Manchester United fan. Maybe you could say this PSG game was like a high that we're slowly creeping up to. Maybe we haven't had that high, like get to top four, batter some of these big teams. We've had a few big city wins. But against those lower oppositions, like the Newcastle away, those are the ones that we just got to get rid of, right?
Yeah, and we've started to address those. You know, those wins are we're getting much more doable with the kind of form we had when the season got paused. So sentiment's high, sir. I'm feeling very optimistic about this team.
It's a goal issue, right? It was like we lost how many goals to Lukaku? Like 15 to 20.
Yep.
And we didn't get anyone in.
And Rashford
got
hurt.
It's really a goals issue. Maguire's done his job at the back. But going forward, it's just like, can we, like a Sheffield United, how are we goals against these like tough you know, these tough teams that defend well.
Sir, there's a goal scorer on the market. Sir, there's a goal scorer on the market that his price has been named, and we're going to talk about him in a second. So I'm curious to get your opinion on that one.
Absolutely, sir. Should we move on to United in the news?
Absolutely, sir. First bit of news. I thought this was a good one to keep because it's got a little MLS / United Connect. FC Cincinnati mulls ex-Man United coach Jap Stam for their position. Obviously, this is the new MLS team that was recently expanded from starting the 2019 season, and they're looking to fill that vacant spot. What do you think about Jap Stam coming in to be the manager there? Unbelievable defender. I think only played like 4 seasons at United, but he was such a rock at the back. Got to watch some performances of his in Champions League. Top stuff. What do you think about him going to the MLS?
Not bothered, sir.
You don't consider him a legend?
Yeah, look, if Jap Stam retires, is he wearing a United jersey? That's how you, because like American football versus like European football, players change teams a lot. But what jersey would Jap Stam wear? I don't know if it'd be a United jersey. So you ask Ronaldo, what jersey are you wearing? You retire. He's wearing Real Madrid.
Yep.
You ask Rooney, what jersey in the Hall of Fame? It's going to be Manchester United. So that question for me, that really determines who is a Manchester United legend. Jap Stam, I don't know. It's out for me. It's on the edge. MLS, I like where the league's headed. I think they need promotion relegation. If MLS had promotion relegation, I'd be all in, sir. I mean, really, that's the only thing. It'll never happen.
Never happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know it won't happen, but like you can't have 36 teams and no promotion relegation. Like the game in America is dying for that, and I don't know why the European game is capitalist. And in America, our sports are socialist.
It's funny.
It makes no sense to me. It's supposed to provide parity in the league, but, you know, the Patriots win the Super Bowl every year, and the Giants suck. So I hard to see the parity for me. NHL's got it right. NHL has great parity. But, again, I can't get behind MLS without promotion relegation.
There you go, sir. Next bit of news, and this is one that just won't go away, is Kane could join Manchester United. Spurs have named their price, and it's £200 million. That's according to a variety of sources that Levy has named his price. He is willing to sanction the deal due to the effect of coronavirus on the club's finances, with Spurs needing the cash for payments for their $1 billion stadium, which they still owe £637 million on loan. Quite a bit of money due. What do you think? Harry Kane, £200 million, sir. Are you interested?
I wouldn't be interested at like $70 million, sir. Right. Honestly. Right. Like, what makes you think Harry Kane is the striker that Manchester United need? I mean, like, honestly, if you look at how Ole wants to play, like, Kane's used to – I mean, like, Kane with Bruno might be dangerous, right? You know, obviously, it's one of those things where Kane always had Eriksen. The way they play, it's a little different than United, and you have Rashford on the wing. I guess – I don't know. What do you think? What formation would you play?
If
you had Harry Kane.
I mean, you could play him. You could play a 4-3-3 with him up front. The problem is like you said, we want to play like a strong counterattacking team. A lot of steel in midfield, a really good back line, and then just like rapid pace up front. He's not your guy, and he's not the same player he was 2 years ago. He's just like he hasn't gotten better. He has injuries now that are a major issue, and that price tag is just insane. £200 million, like get out of here. I'd rather take Son. You know, it's like he's more the player I want on this team, bro. Like Son is—he's probably a better player than Kane right now.
For Son, are you kidding me?
I play $150 for Son, maybe, or $120, but you go for Sancho.
I tweeted this out. I think Kane. A few things why you can't. First of all, you can't pay $200 million for anyone. If you're paying $200 million, you get Mbappe or you get Messi from Barcelona. Those are the only two players that you probably pay $200 million.
Mbappe. Mbappe's worth $200 million.
Mbappe's worth $200 million. Messi's worth $200 million. Or Ronaldo, like those three players, $200 million. Harry Kane, not there, maybe $100 million. Clearly, this is coming out of Spurs side. Harry Kane was out in some social media, Instagram Live, saying he would be open to leave. So clearly, the club's trying to splash it in the press that they want him gone. I think he's on the market. I think, you know, Levy's just not willing to pay up. And, you know, the writing's on the wall, so to speak. I tweeted this out. A lot of great comments from the fans. Let me get in. At Cassie Sanders, quote, such a horrible deal. That it makes sense in Woodward's eyes. Absolutely love that one. At Malacuti_3, quote, nah, too expensive. He's a top striker, but injured too often. They need to cut that in half, basically. At MJFit16, we can't drop $200 million on Kane. I'd rather have Sancho and Grealish for $150 million. If we get Kane for 70 and 90, that's a different story. At B Costello Books, quote, this is merely a way to drive his price up. I see him at Real or Barcelona, not Manchester United. I think that's a very sage take there by B Costello Books. And at Charlie underscore Ferris, quote, not at that price. Sancho would have a greater impact at half that price, sir. So again, echoing a lot of the sentiment, no one is really hot on Kane. I mean, I tweeted that out, got tons of comments, not one person being like, absolutely, Harry Kane's awesome.
Well, the price is insane. And what Levy would charge United just being a rival in England and a bigger club, like just like categorically bigger club that he looks up to and kind of envies, he's going to make his pay out of our ass. And we're not that keen. You know, if we were like hot on Harry Kane and was part of what we were going for, that'd be one thing. But I think that ship has passed. And we're going a different direction. Jadon Sancho. If you can get Jadon Sancho and Grealish and Jude Bellingham for the same price, the same £200 million, that's a much better deal, bro. Sancho's 20 years old, bro. 20.
No, look, let's not hate on Harry Kane. But
he's a great player. Like, £200 million is crazy, though.
I mean, if Harry Kane was healthy and he could, and he was proven to score, you know, 25 a season, I mean, like, let me just pull up Harry Kane's stats.
I mean, I take him for a hundo, but I wouldn't take him for this kind of crazy money. And I wouldn't take him because we have other places we need to fill. The right wing has basically been neglected for years, more years than I want to even acknowledge. So getting Sancho has to be the number one priority above anybody else. You know, even if you just got Sancho, it would be a decent window.
Well, Sancho provides balance to the team. You know, that's what it's all about. It's all about balance on the wing. You have Rashford from the left, Sancho on the right, Martial down the middle, or you bring another striker. Okay, looking at his goal, sir, Tottenham Hotspur, I mean, 1920, 11 goals, sir.
How many appearances?
This is Premier League only. We're talking Premier League only. 20 appearances, 11 goals.
It's not bad.
Last season, 17 and 28. Season before that, 30 and 37. 29 and 30, 25, 38, 21, 34. The time to buy Harry Kane was in 2016, 17.
Yeah.
Right. I think he's already on the decline.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, he scored 41 goals for Spurs in 17, 18. That was the time to trade him. Then 24, obviously 17. So, I mean, he's on track for half that production of the 2017, 18 season. It's not the time to buy Harry Kane. I think he's already on the decline. And, you know, how old is he right now? He's 26. That's it. I thought he was much older. I thought he was 28.
He broke on when he was a young player. You want to talk about another player that's past it, sir? Even more so past it? That's the next bit of news.
Sir, first of all, he played for Arsenal Ridgeway Rovers. What a team, Ridgeway Rovers. I love that. That sounds like from New Jersey, something like that. Parkway Rovers, Garden State Parkway Rovers in New Jersey. Shout out NJ.
Anyway, next bit of news is that man, Manchester United Sanchez, won't take a pay cut to leave. That's right. He'd rather stick it out. He'd rather stick it out at Manchester United than leave in a cut price deal the next transfer window. So he's getting paid £500,000 a week, apparently, at Old Trafford, and is not willing to accept reduced terms, even if it helped facilitate a move away. Looks like we are stuck with Sancho. I think he's got another 2 years on
not
his deal.
Sanchez,
sir. Yeah. Another 2 years on his contract, which is unbelievable. That's got to go down as one of the worst contracts United's ever done. But you see him playing for United? You see him being a key player next year, sir?
No, this is the worst contract, not the worst player.
Yes.
In the 18-19 season in Premier League for Manchester United,
he scored two goals.
No, actually, total in all competitions, two goals. The year before that in the Premier League, three goals, and he obviously only played half a season for Manchester United. And at Inter Milan, he has scored one in all competitions.
Brutal.
Alexis Sanchez, what is that, seven goals for, what, 30-something million? So, I mean, you're paying $3 million a goal. I mean, Sanchez, there's no one that could have seen him falling off after playing Arsenal. Look at his production in Arsenal, 16, 17, 30. 15, 16, 17, 25, 21, playing for Barcelona, sir. I love Sanchez at Barcelona.
He was great.
He was great on Arsenal. I think he's got to play as number 10, though, at United. Well, I think
that spot
is
taken,
him on the wing.
That spot is taken.
I don't know.
No, I agree. I think he was often played out of position, put on the wing when he should have been like a false nine. I think that's when he looked his best, playing up the middle. But that spot is taken by a much better player at the moment, and that's Bruno Fernandes.
Dude, watch a Sanchez video from 14 to 17.
I know. He was lights out. He scored bangers.
When he was signed, everyone wanted him. Dude, this was like over the moon signing. Like Bruno got like a tenth of the fanfare that Sanchez coming in January got. I mean, Bruno was like, everyone's just begging and no one knew. But I mean, like Bruno ends up being the January signing that we wanted Sanchez to be. Right. I mean, it's one of those where whenever we pay the big money all-star deals, they never come due. I mean, this is one of those big money Paul Pogba, Lukaku contracts. They all just end up being a nightmare. And you'd rather get the young, hungry Portuguese players on the come up, sir. I say we just do that. Go to the Portuguese league. They make them good in Portugal.
They do.
We got Ronaldo there. I mean, you're getting cut rate deals. It seems great.
That's why you don't sign Harry Kane for £200 million. Right.
Exactly.
Next bit of news, sir. You want to talk about this one? I thought we were talking about he will not be named.
Okay, so I put this on there. Pogba is going on the Manchester United podcast, which will be launched, I think, Monday, but they put some quotes up online. If you listen to that podcast, all you're getting is Pogganda, sir. Hard to say.
Pogganda. That's good. I can't do it.
You know, but like, you know how the United pod is. They're great pods. They have the legends on, but it's all softball city. You know, can't say anything about the ownership. How can you work for this team and not say anything about the ownership? I mean,
they wouldn't be working clearly for the team much longer.
Well, yeah, I would get hired and start bashing them and I'd be out the door. But sir, you know, I'm an American. Sir, we speak our minds here. Pogba has said on the pod, quote, "You have to be very patient because, well, my injury, I don't know if people really know what happened. So I had a foot injury, which came in the game against Southampton. It was early in the season, and I carried it on for a long time, training and trying to play with it. After that, I stopped, and I found I had a fracture. So I put a cast on it, and it went very well, but too well. The bone got bigger, so when I came back, I played those two games against Watford and Newcastle. That won you the stake bet, sir. I think it came on as a sub.
What am I getting that stake, sir? What am I getting that stake?
After quarantine, I guess I could feel something again. So I had an operation, and now here I am. I don't feel anything, and hopefully I'll be back soon. So this is kind of Pogganda, sir. I mean, clearly he's brushing over, why are you playing basketball in the United States, sitting courtside? What are you doing out in Dubai? Why is your agent chirping? They're not going to ask any questions like that. Like, if I had an interview with Paul Pogba for 10 minutes, I would just be like, call bullshit on all this. Because you're just like, hey, man, like, this is insane. Like, what about this post here? What about that? What about your agent doing this? It's like, come on, man. There's like, why are you meeting with Zidane in Dubai and posting that photo? It's like so much stuff, so many bigger questions that should be asked. But you're getting kind of the soft Pogba story here. What do you make of it? You believe it?
More of the same. I mean, he's just trying to save face. I get it. You know, we all want Pogba to play, be a great player for us. But he's just shown that, you know, his heart's not really at Manchester United. That's why I think we slight him as openly as we do. It's just because I want players that want to play for this club, that, you know, it's important for them to prove themselves to the fans and everything this club stands for. So, you know, I want Pogba. He wants to leave. I want him to be happy. I want him to go on his way and help finance a huge summer of buying. So if he's going to come play for whatever season that ends up being and we get back top four, win some silverware, that's great. I want players that are happy to play at United. So if he changes his mind, he's like, damn, this Bruno kid is lights out. We're going to win shit. I want to play with him. That's one thing. But if it's like more of the same, him just like chirping, his brother's chirping, his agent chirping, I'm good. Yeah. I don't want any more of that. I want positive sentiment only at United going forward.
Yes, exactly. I think, you know, if it's unfair to Ole, right? Because it's clear the players that like Ole, I feel like he has to accommodate Paul, right? He accommodates him. He only says nice things about him in the press. Clearly Mourinho slated him. I think it's just a hard situation for Ole to deal with. And then bringing him back in, I just don't want to interrupt that mojo. So if Paul Pogba comes in, he wants to play for United, all is good. You know, but as far as like prove me wrong on the pitch, I wanted to get back to talking about football because, again, like you said, the off the field drama with the agent, like how is he able to like have his agent saying those things in the press, arguing with like Woodward and the board and insulting the ambitions of the club. And then Paul Pogba just walks in the dressing room like nothing happened. I mean, that's kind of strange, right? Like everyone knows that he's a part of it. And it's kind of like you're fighting with the establishment that you're playing for. You most likely want to leave. You said it last summer. It just doesn't seem like a net positive to me unless Pogba's like hitting two and just doing his thing on the field. Because the off the field stuff matters. What's Bruno doing off the field?
getting
he's going to Tesco with his wife. Remember his wife?
Yeah.
The game runs deep, son. What's Paul Pogba up to? I don't know.
I don't think it was Tesco, but that I don't really care about that. I just wanted to play and stop talking. Talk on the pitch, not off the pitch.
He has no leverage though in this situation, which is amazing. United have him, you know, for the next two years. I think with an extension. So Paul Pogba's got it, and no one's going to want to buy because apparently Real is going to buy Mbappe, not him. No one's going to have the money to meet the $150 million, especially now. Paul Pogba is going nowhere, so I hope he changes his attitude. If he changes his attitude, no one's going to root against Paul P here.
No.
I mean, honestly, I just want it to be about the football. I don't want it to be about his agent, about the distractions. And as long as he can get away from that, he's welcome at Manchester United. Next bit of news here, sir. I thought there was an interesting article. ESPN touched on the anti-VAR Premier League table or the sans VAR Premier League table. No surprise, Liverpool would be first, but United, we would drop from where we currently stand to 10th, sir. We have gotten the most VAR calls in our favor out of any team in the EPL. We should be the biggest fans of VAR. What do you make of it? Clearly we want it, right? Because we're benefiting from it. But do you think VAR is here to stay in its current form, or what changes can you expect?
Hard to say, sir. I mean, I've liked it because it's benefited us quite a bit, especially last season. This season, I can't even tell the difference anymore. So, yeah, huge fan of VAR, but when it goes against you, I won't be speaking the same tune. You know, most of these were justified. Some of them were lucky, to be honest, but most of them were the right call after VAR took a look, mainly because United is such an attacking team, are going to create those close, you know, calls that have to often be decided
by
VAR.
What was that? Was it Chelsea, that Chelsea game that we just got all those hysterical VAR calls?
Yeah, I think so.
And we end up winning.
Yeah, they got the overturned goal by, yeah.
like offsides by, was that Giroud? Yep. I mean, but look, for me, looking at PSG, I like the way the referee's called to look at the replay. I think that has to change. I think the other change would be like, I want to hear what they're talking about live. I want the mic to be live so that they say, hey, we're looking at a handball on this play. We need you to take a look at it. The referee looks at it, explains his decision live, so you can hear it on TV. I think that would change the game, add transparency to the decisions, because a lot of times the fans are guessing, and then you're going to, like, you know, Michael Owen post-game, asking him what he thinks, and he's not a referee. I want to hear what the referees are talking about. I want to hear why they're making the decision. As a fan, that might eliminate some of the frustration. I don't know how you do that in the stadium, obviously, but, you know, for the viewers at home, I think it'd go a long way. I saw an example of that in an Australian Football League, and it was awesome to hear them discuss the decision and then make the final call.
I think it's a great idea. I'd love to see it. I just I'm not holding my breath. I don't see the FA doing that in England.
Changes are going to come. I mean, the offside rule. Look, here's the thing with VAR. The decisions leading the goals, 22. Disallowed goals, 46, sir. Right? So if you really think about it, that's negative, right? It's taking away goals. And I think what they want is, obviously, the disallowed goals, how many of those are offside? 28 of those 46. So I think you're going to see a major change in the offside rule. People are talking about any part of your body has to be, basically the attacker can be onside if any part of his body is on the line, right? So I can be completely over the line with my foot behind the line now and be onside. So it basically give the striker the advantage. And I think that's probably where we're headed with the offsides rule, right?
I mean, the worst one are goals awarded after incorrect offside, because that really just changes the game. Once you see that flag, players treat it differently.
Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. Sir.
So your mom's calling.
I know.
That means we got to wrap up the pod.
Sir. It's actually my mom calling. You
it's
that?
Easter.
You
it's Easter. I saw it, sir. I saw it.
It's Easter.
Let's go.
What a riot, sir. What a podcast. You're the man, sir. I love catching up about United. Watching the classic matches is a great way to do it. If you want to join us, we do it every Sunday morning, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Next week, we'll do another game, maybe from this season. It's easier to get the most recent games, sir. I know you've been watching a lot of matches on MU TV. Maybe we'll put out a poll again. Either way, I appreciate everyone who subscribes and downloads to the pod. We hope everyone is staying safe and healthy. I'm quarantined. Alex is quarantined. So stay inside. It's a smart thing to do right now. And hopefully we'll be back to normal. Cheering on Manchester United. Singing those songs.
Mom's coming again. You want any top cities, sir?
Absolutely.
I'll go top to bottom. And it's a Freedom Forward list as usual. We appreciate all the downloads. Number one, how you doing? How you doing? Granite City, Illinois. Number two, Satellite Beach, Florida. Number three, Glencoe, Illinois. And number four, Black Mountain, North Carolina. Number five, Cheltenham, United Kingdom. Number six, Brooklyn, New York. Number seven, Bossier City, Louisiana. Number eight, San Antonio, Texas. Number nine, Noblesville, Indiana. And last but not least, Florence, South Carolina. Appreciate all the downloads. Appreciate all the listens. We're trying to make, you know, lemonade out of lemons because making the most of this quarantine, and I think we're doing a decent job, sir.
Sir, love this club. Love this club. Watching the classic matches is great. Just talking shit with you is great. Apologies for the format. Clearly, we're not together. We can't be as coordinated, so it's probably a little more informal, but authenticity is what matters here at the American Red Devils podcast. For fans, by fans, sir. My mom's going to call me. These
again.
The situations we're dealing with.
She's going to call you again.
hope everyone's having a... having a good one and staying safe out there. No joke, sir. How good does it feel? We'll be back.
11 games unbeaten. Still rolling. Woo! Sir. Always at the wheel.